Well, hello everybody and welcome back to the All Saints podcast. I'm here with my good friend, your fellow congregation member here at All Saints, Garrett Treese. It's great to see you, Garrett.
You too. Likewise.
And I wanted to share with you today something that Garrett and I were talking about recently. It recalls, initially it was prompted in my mind by a conversation I remember from years ago, probably 30 years ago. And then we just were talking more and it struck me afresh how it's a very helpful illustration of how the church is supposed to function and how even perhaps how Christ and the church relate. So I'll tell you the backstory, the illustration that was first given to me. And then, Garrett, if you want, I'll hand over to you and you can bounce off that and talk to the viewers at home about where that illustration went in our conversation recently. So here's how it went. I used to be a conductor of a jazz orchestra. And we went from being a pretty bad jazz orchestra to being a reasonably good one. And one of our trumpet players, one of the most accomplished musicians in the band, said that jazz musicians tend to go through three stages. They go independence. I get this right. Dependence.
Dependence.
I'm getting it wrong. You're helping me out, right? So dependence, independence, interdependence.
That's right.
And the way it works with jazz musicians is that initially you rock up at the band and you don't know what you're doing, so you're entirely dependent on everybody else,
right,
to know when to come in and to know when to go up the octave on the trumpet and hit the high notes and to know when it's your turn to do a solo. And you don't have enough familiarity with how things work to actually contribute much. You just get in the way, really, and everyone is dependent on everybody else, and it's a mess, because if a blind man leads a blind man, both fall into a pit.
That's right.
And then what happens, and this is where we were in the band, we were transitioning from dependence to the next stage, independence, which is what my friend Simon Chatterjee was his name. And independence is the stage that a lot of musicians get to when they actually start getting better. They're technically better, their improvisation is more interesting. They can follow the music. They're more familiar with the tunes. And so these are jazz musicians. Okay, so off they go. And like, it's like having 20 completely disconnected musicians screeching and howling away. And it was fascinating just hearing this stage of Simon's story, because I remember being in a band like this, playing some hits from The Commitments. Remember The Commitments?
The Commitments. I'm afraid that was before my
time. Before your time. Sorry about that. Anyway, so this was at high school. I was in a band that played some music from The Commitments. And by the end of Sweet Home Chicago, it was just chaos on the stage. Because we had a bunch of good musicians who weren't paying attention to each other. So dependence, independence, and the final stage that Simon pointed, this is where we're trying to get to, is interdependence.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Where it's not that we have this kind of needy, wrong kind of dependence on each other.
Like a desperation.
Like, and I'm going to fall apart if you're not there.
Right, right.
But neither is it the case that, hey, I don't need you.
Yeah.
I'm doing my thing.
Yeah, yeah.
It's rather that we contribute positively to each other and feed off each other. And I, on a few occasions in my life, I've actually been in bands that work like that. And it is, I remember, I told you this story earlier. I was in a jazz gig, an impromptu jazz gig, playing piano in the house band for a Thursday night jam session or something. And it was me and the bass player, and then the drummer showed up and he joined in. And it was just fantastic because we're feeding off each other and he's playing really well and he's making me better. And I think I was probably making him better.
Yeah.
So dependence, independence, interdependence. And it struck me again and again over the years, and it struck me in talking with you earlier, Garrett, that's how the church ought to function.
Hmm.
Not dependence, a kind of craven neediness, not independence, like, well, I'm strong now, I don't need any help from anybody else, but interdependence. And as we were talking, about a slightly different,
the rope illustration.
Give us the rope illustration.
So the rope illustration is, for instance, two dependent people, you know, both, if you can imagine, both of them holding two ends of a rope and the middle of the rope is strung over a crane.
Mm.
And two dependent people are going to be just stuck there hanging from the end of a rope because they're both dependent upon each other to hold on, and they can't really rely on each other, though.
And if one guy lets go, the other guy falls to his death.
If one guy lets go, right. The other guy falls to his death.
So it's, help me, help me, help me. No,
right.
You help me.
Yeah, right. You help me, you help me. It's kind of like putting the other person in a wrong way, putting them first.
Right, right.
If that makes sense.
It's like you're either completely concerned about them and their neediness.
Yes.
Or completely concerned about you and your neediness, and neither of you is being helped.
Right.
So that's the dependent state. So independent, what would happen?
Independence is either just I don't need you and letting go of the rope, or
which you discover was a bad idea.
Yeah, which is a bad idea because in some sense you do need the other person,
right?
But it's either letting go of the rope and just detaching, right, from the other person entirely, or it's this race to the top, a kind of competitiveness against the other person.
Right.
To, you know, get there first, get to the crane first, to get to safety first, whatever it is. And so neither of those situations work either of the people.
With the independent thing, if let's suppose you're on one end of the rope, I'm on the other end of the rope, and we're both trying to climb, you get there first,
mm-hmm.
and you get to the top, and you're like, I'm done, I'm
yeah.
safe. And you let go of the rope.
Right. So there's no sense of...
And I'm dead, right, at that point.
That's you're dead, and there's no sense of my responsibility for you.
Right. Right, right,
right. In that independent situation.
So dependence, we're just shouting at each other, blaming each other, hanging ready to fall at any point. Independence, we either just let go or race to the top and the other one dies. So interdependence then, in that scenario.
Interdependence in the illustration would look like both people climbing simultaneously to the top and balancing each other's weight so that even if I happen to be, let's say, I'm stronger than you.
Just say, for example.
For example.
Like, that's totally implausible, isn't it?
Let's just say, but if I get...
Those of you who are watching on video will realize that is not entirely implausible.
So let's say I get to the top first,
mm-hmm.
right? And we're interdependent upon each other. And that means I'm responsible to hold the rope
right,
while you
right.
climb. Or if you have no strength left to climb, then I can actually sort of put my weight down
right.
and sort of tip lean the back. Scales, lean back, tip the scales in the other direction and pull you up just with my weight.
Right. You're bouncing at the arm. Right. I'm going up like this.
Right. Exactly. Right. I'm bouncing on the rope.
Right.
And then as I bounce on the rope and you achieve more height, then I can climb and sort of match you a little bit more so that both of us have the same result of, let's say, arriving at that place of safety.
Yeah. So we're both giving what we can. I just have fewer chin-ups in me than you.
Right.
And
right.
that's okay because, but I'm not hanging there blaming you for getting me into this mess.
Right. Right.
And it
I don't feel burdened by you to help you up.
Because you feel like we're in it together.
Because we're in it together. That's right. Mm-hmm. Right.
And so what struck me immediately thinking about this was, I mentioned this already, the relationship to the doctrine of the church.
Mm-hmm.
So a church that where everyone feels dependent or is encouraged to do so, there's almost a race to the bottom of the trough of neediness. You know, mm-hmm. the more attention, like the more needy I can make myself, the more attention I'm going to get, the more I'll feel like I have a place here, because this is a place for dependent people.
Right.
And it's quite easy to see how that goes badly wrong. At the same time, to be thinking, you know, brother, I own nothing.
Mm-hmm.
The independent mentality is destructive. Whereas if we realize that we are all simultaneously sinners and victims, we're all simultaneously in a mess,
yeah,
partly of our own making,
mm-hmm.
and partly just, you know, circumstances beyond our control,
right?
And all of us, crucially, all of us have the Spirit of Christ. Paul is at great pains in 1 Corinthians 12, for example, to emphasize everyone's got something to give. You might not have the most spectacular gifts, but you've got something to give. All of us, well, how does Paul put it in Romans 8? But by the Spirit, we fulfill the righteous requirements of the law by the Spirit who's at work in us. All of us we're not just victims. Every person in the body can help every part of the body, and even the parts that are least reputable, we treat with greater honor.
Right, right.
So everyone is seeking to give to everyone else from what they've received.
Right. And so that is like a picture of the way our Lord relates to us, his body.
Right, right, right.
And then also a picture of the way we relate to each other within the body of Christ.
Because it strikes me as when we think about our Lord's relationship to us, so just take half a step back, our relationship to each other within the body of Christ, your crane and rope illustration really readily illuminates how Christians relate to each other. And it's one of the wonderful things I've noticed actually about the Congregation at All Saints, that people help each other out in practical ways, and people pray for each other, and people are interested in each other's lives. And it's not always the same person who's helping everybody.
Everyone
has got something to give. But trying to figure out how is it that the case that Christ is somehow involved in that same dynamic takes a bit more work. And I was chewing over this since we spoke. And I wonder if one way of putting it is in Philippians 2 terms, Christ humbled himself. Christ lowered himself down on the rope where we're hanging on the other end.
Right.
And it's simultaneously the case that, yeah, of course, he's the one who hauls us up. And he's showing us how to climb up the rope.
Right.
So we're not becoming semi-Pelagian or Pelagian, worse, at this point. You know, Jesus is just a moral example. In fact, even our clinging onto the rope for half a second is a gift of God's grace, and it's Christ in you, the hope of glory, and so on. And yet at the same time, Jesus is a moral example.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Pelagius was right in what he affirmed, just wrong in what he denied. It is the case that Christ, by giving himself for his people, shows us how to give ourselves for one another.
Right.
And so you then see this if you just think for half a second of the real human struggles that he had in his life.
Right.
It's not that he succumbs to sin, but he was tempted just as we are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we parse this illustration as you know, the pain on your hands is the pain of the temptation to sin and anger and impatience.
Yes.
His hands never slipped once, which means they're really burning.
Like,
he's really getting cramp in his forearms, and he's, you know, it's the skin is being scored off his knuckles, and because he's clinging so tight, he never slips. It's by resisting temptation that you feel its full force. The person who just lets go doesn't resist temptation, doesn't feel any pain in their fingers.
Right.
Jesus knows what it's like to be hanging by faithfully by that rope, so to speak, and resisting the drag downwards of sin.
Right. So these two ditches or these two temptations are not things that Jesus just easily sort of throws them away. Like,
He's not holding onto a helium balloon.
Right. Like, it's so easy for me.
Yeah.
But there is something in the careful, thoughtful distinction between this dependent neediness on the one hand and this, you know, willful, stubborn independence on the other hand, that the Lord is familiar with.
Yeah.
Very, very, even more familiar with than we are.
Yes,
And in resisting those two temptations, we have something of our Lord in us.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes. I like that. What it also calls to mind, I hadn't thought about this previously, but I think it's Joe Rigney, who has recently utilized a similar illustration to highlight the dangers that sometimes occur when people try and make you a victim of their pathology. Right. So how Joe's illustration works is, you know, as a guy ties a rope around his waist, hands you the other end, and then jumps off a cliff, leaving you holding the other end of the rope. He says, now you've got to save me. Okay. And in other words, so now the function of the illustration is to say, you have to watch out for people who simply demand that you feel and experience their angst.
Right.
So that's empathy in the sense of feeling what somebody else is feeling.
Right.
Misfiring badly. And his point is, you don't, if I'm understanding Joe's point rightly, you don't have a moral obligation to hold on to every rope that somebody just hands you.
That's right.
But now here's the interesting thing. Let's suppose we grant the point that that illustration is making for the sake of argument. I want to suggest that a more realistic picture of what we're actually like in our daily lives is that we're actually dangling by a rope as well.
Yeah.
So the person who thinks I'm there standing safe and secure on solid ground, and you go handing me this rope to hold on to, has forgotten that there but for the grace of God go I. And actually, there I am by the grace of God. I'm actually dangling.
Hmm.
If somebody, to make it more concrete in terms of relationships within the church, let's suppose somebody comes up to you and says, brother, I need you to help me. I'm struggling with pornography. Suppose somebody says that. And that wise men in church contexts say that fairly frequently,
mm-hmm.
if they're trying to wrestle with that serious sin. So suppose a guy says that. Now, what do you do? Do you say, okay, you just tied the rope around your waist, handed me the other end and jumped off the cliff? I'm not responsible to help you.
Right.
I think actually, you know, what a wise man says is, yeah, whether or not I struggle with pornography, I drive past the same billboards every day.
Right, right.
I'm living in the same world. I surf the same internet. I'm on the same Facebook, perish the thought. You know, right. We are all about five clicks away from serious temptation.
Yeah. Right.
And for us to say, for us to parse those situations simply as I'm standing secure and how dare you make me responsible for helping you.
Yeah.
There may be situations in which that's right, and perhaps that's what Joe has in mind, but I think it's a more healthy way to think of ourselves as there but for the grace of God go I. We're all, by Christ's grace, holding a rope, and we need each other.
Right.
And sometimes I'll get at the top of the rope before somebody else, and I've got to reach down and help them up.
That's right.
And sometimes somebody else gets there before me, and they've got to do the same for me. And always it's Christ in you. It's the Spirit of Christ who's at work in us to will and to do according to his good purposes. And on the last day, we will see that with crystal clarity as we give praise to him for all that he's done through us for each other.
Help me with the Bible reference. We who are strong have an obligation to bear with the weak or the failings of the weak.
It's either Romans 14 or 1 Corinthians 11. Thanks for giving me that live on air. I appreciate it.
Yeah, sorry for that.
No, is it? Well, it's, no, it's not 1 Corinthians 11. It's the weak and the strong bit. So it's in, yeah, it's in Romans 14 or it's in 1 Corinthians.
Okay. Kind of
nearly parallel. Yeah.
Right. So,
But yeah, definitely, we who are strong have an obligation to bear with the failings of the weak and not to please ourselves.
Yeah, not to please ourselves. So that's like a biblical example of the same, of the analogy.
Yes.
Right.
Because it turns out that you who think you're strong.
Yeah.
This is a whole rhetorical posture that Paul adopts towards the Corinthians. It's like, you're so wise.
Yeah.
You're so strong. Yeah. Of course you are.
Yeah.
In all those worldly ways that don't matter.
Mm-hmm.
Would that we were really strong so that we might show you what strength is. And actually, God has chosen to put us on display as the weakest of all so that we might shame you who thought you were so strong into realizing that God uses the weak to shame the strong and the foolish to shame the wise.
Right. So in this pursuit of holiness or this pursuit of godliness, right, we are, you know, making progress, arriving at new levels, new chapters, and experiencing greater grace or more peace, or whatever it is. But in all of those wonderful blessings, we have this, not only a responsibility, but the way to continue on that path is not to just leave your brothers and sisters in the dust.
Yes, yes.
Right? It's not that kind of race.
Yeah.
It's a different kind of race where you're not only bound by obligation, but bound by love to the rest of the body, to every member of, in our case, at All Saints.
Yeah. And the simple truth is, I often observe this pastorally. There are people with whom I've had conversations about their struggles in the Christian life. And let's say in that situation, I'm closer to the top, or in that particular issue, more or less at the top of near the crane, and I'm in a position to help them up.
Yeah.
But then what sometimes happens is that those people find themselves in a conversation with somebody else where they're a good deal higher than that other person.
Yeah.
And to realize that, man, I got to shape up here. If I don't provide some kind of guidance, instruction, prayer, accountability, help, encouragement, this person's in trouble.
Right.
To be put in a position where somebody depends upon you in a healthy way,
right,
is tremendously good for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, best illustration of this I've ever come across is how much can a mother lift? I mean, we know roughly how much, like deadlift, like an average, reasonably healthy female might be able to deadlift, I don't know what it is, 100 and something pounds.
Sure.
Or maybe 100 pounds. It's quite a lot, right? But there are accounts of normally built women lifting cars off the ground.
Yes.
Because they had a child trapped under the wheel. And they'll lift with such force that they crush their own vertebrae in the base of their spine, because all of the inbuilt restraints that normally stop you injuring yourself, because you care so passionately about somebody else. Now, I'm not suggesting that we go around injuring ourselves for the sake of others. What I am suggesting is that that's what Jesus did.
Right.
So Jesus allowed the brakes to be taken off his, the normal human self-restraint that would stop him going to the cross, stop him enduring that hardship. He allowed that to happen, and sovereignly as God, he caused that to happen.
Right.
So that he might endure the very depths of pain to lift the weight off us. And we are called not to lift the car off anybody and crush our lower spine.
Mm-hmm.
We are called to endure, what does Paul call them again? Light and momentary afflictions.
Yes.
Remember when he says, I've been shipwrecked 5 times, day and the night in the open sea.
That's right.
Beaten with rods, 40 lashes minus one. And then he calls them light and momentary afflictions.
Yeah.
And we're all like, yeah, that's pretty light, Paul. Uh-huh. You're pretty,
yeah.
So, yes. So,
go on. Is there a flip side to this?
Mm-hmm.
Where,
probably.
Like, you know, if you are not the one who seems to be making a lot of progress in your pursuit of maturity or holiness or godliness, but rather find yourself in kind of interdependent on others to, let's say, model that example for you, right?
Yeah.
And they are the ones who are pulling you up, right? Or they are the ones bearing your weight for you, right? I can see how that situation might provoke a couple of different reactions.
Mm-hmm.
One, resentment. Because of the desire for independence.
Mm.
And then two, a kind of like taking it for granted.
Yes, yes.
Right? Because you get like kind of used to other people sort of bearing the weight of, let's say, your own childishness or the foolishness of your heart or something.
Yeah, yeah. And that's a challenge that you get in many different situations. It can be a problem with the ethos of being in counseling.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I'm all in favor of pastoral counsel. I spend a lot of time counseling people, right? But that's not the same as having people who are in counseling, where it's almost like that's the psychological or spiritual equivalent of, my leg is in a cast, I can't walk. Like, well, you might just have to walk. I mean, and you may discover that in the wilderness, your shoes don't wear out.
Right.
And your clothes will last just fine because right. they'll will preserve you. But he's not going to preserve you if you just lie there.
Yeah.
And it's, you get analogous situations, perhaps parents with kids leaving home, where they are ready to carry an increasing burden themselves. Kids growing up, and you have a 2-year-old.
Yeah.
By the time you've got a 5-year-old, you'll be thinking, my goodness, all these things that she's doing. parents are not always ready for their kids to actually leave
yeah.
when their kids are ready to. And that can be difficult to navigate.
Yeah.
And needs, so the parents need to let their kids go.
When a parent prefers the society of their child more than the child's thriving.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? Yeah. Yeah. That's definitely true. And
yeah.
And it's a real tragedy. I mean, this is now maybe a different topic, but I've seen situations where you have really wonderful parents of small children who don't know how to let their kids go.
Yeah.
Because they've been surrounded by a young and growing family for so long, they don't know how to make the transition to letting those children become the adults that they've prepared them so wonderfully to be.
Yeah.
And I remember one situation which was it was like a slow motion train crash, because with every child that reached 17, 18, 19, who were really great kids, and the parents were wonderful in the sense that they'd raised such great children, but each time the hatches got battened down a little bit more tightly.
Yeah.
And it was, I started to worry about the younger children ever being allowed to exercise any of the right kind of independence at all.
Because... Right. You mentioned these three, are they stages?
I think they can be.
They can be stages. Yeah. So dependence, independence, interdependence, these can be progressive stages.
I think they can be stages in how a person matures as a human being.
Yeah.
So that's the idea.
Yeah.
So it's totally natural for, let's say, a new Christian or a child to be dependent.
Of course.
Right?
Of course.
You've got a 2-year-old.
Yeah.
All of us parents have been there. And you don't expect a 2-year-old to be anything other than dependent. And then what happens is that the child grows and they start doing their own thing. And you're like, whoa, hold on a second.
Yeah.
Don't smash your sister over the head with a Lego car. That's not nice. We need to learn to relate to one another in a constructive and mutually edifying way,
right.
interdependence. Now, that's the normal progress of childhood. What happens in a Christian life is that sometimes Christians are immature.
Yeah.
Sometimes we exemplify as adults traits which really are spiritual childishness.
Right.
So
right.
It's like the author of Hebrews chastises his hearers for still needing milk.
Yeah.
It's like, what's wrong with you guys?
Yeah.
You should be, by now some of you should be teaching and you're not even ready to step out of the crib. So, yeah.
Is there a spiritual equivalent of that?
Yeah,
in the Christian life where you have a like childhood stage or a dependent stage. Yes.
And you really got to get out of it.
And you've got to get out of it. As soon as you realize that you're in it.
Yeah.
You've got to
get out of it. And one of the wonderful privileges of being a pastor, and actually this is a privilege of being an attentive Christian member of a church, is to see people around you growing into new stages of Christian maturity.
Right.
To see, I mean, we just ordained 4 new deacons. Much to their astonishment, I'll be honest. If you talk, I bet every one of those guys, if you talked to them 10 years ago, or 2 years ago,
no way.
And you said, they'd have said, like, no, man, anybody.
Yeah, anybody else.
And that's natural. Like I remember the situation with one of our children. I won't embarrass the child by even revealing the gender. But saying the sweetest thing, like, oh, I never want to leave home. I never want to leave you, mummy.
Yeah.
It was mummy, I think, not daddy.
Yeah.
And it's so beautiful. And so, because what it reflects is this person is at the right stage for an 8-year-old.
Right.
And you want them not to be anxious and not to be concerned about when they're 18, but just to realize you're going to grow up. And I remember that's what we said to this child. You'll grow up and there'll come a day where you really are looking forward to leaving. Let me tell you, we've got 2 kids at college now and one who's nearly that age. And that prophecy has proved true.
Yeah. So. I don't want to say that the dependent stage or the independent stage is useless or worthless because it seems like they have their purpose in the Christian life.
Yeah.
But with the realization in mind that the goal is to move through those two stages into the interdependence we've been talking about.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. That's right. Well, I'm grateful for your time. Thank you for coming in and
pleasure to be
sharing
here.
With all these people some of the things that we talked about. As ever, well, by the time you are listening to this or watching this, it will have been Easter Day. Today is actually Good Friday. And so I'm grateful to Garrett for coming and joining me. For all of you who are watching and have got this far, well done. Thanks for making it to the end. Happy Easter to you all. The Lord bless you. And bye for now.